I'm Laura Vinroot Poole. For 20 years, I've owned Capital, an internationally recognized specialty store. Capital has never really been about fashion. It's always been about people. What we wore was created to share the meaningful journeys that inspire me. From the designers and friends I meet on the road to the men and women with whom I work each day.
Everybody wants to know her name.
Sally King Benedict is an intuitive painter based in Atlanta, Georgia. Sally King Benedict, I am so excited to have you on the podcast today. How are you? Where are you?
We are up in Nantucket.
So, oh, nice.
Yeah, we are in heaven really right now.
And are you painting there or no?
You know, I take a break when I'm here because every other time I've tried to bring stuff up and supplies, it just never works out. So I left everything at home this year.
Good. That's good. And do you sketch at all?
I do.
Watercolor?
Yeah. I do that. So that doesn't take up too much room. But right now I'm kind of feeling like I just trying to soak it in and take it home. That's kind of what I do when I'm on vacation. I don't try to work too much.
That's so nice. Tell the listeners where you're from.
I am from Atlanta, Georgia, and I grew up there, lived in Charleston for a while, and now we are back in Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta's a great fashion town. My friend Jeffrey unfortunately just closed the store. But what's your first fashion memory in Atlanta?
Oh my goodness. My grandmother was such a Neiman Marcus, just aficionado. She just loved it. I mean, since I was teeny, she would take me to the Zodiac room, which is of course no longer, you know, we'd have lunch and she would, it was like an experience. It's my fondest memory probably of anything with my grandmother.
Was she from Atlanta or?
So they were from Tennessee and they lived out in kind of the country at the time. They lived in Lawrenceville, Georgia. So they drove in for school every day. So my mom grew up in Lawrenceville, but she drove in for school to Atlanta. So my grandmother was kind of, you know, she was removed, but she loved coming into the big city and, you know, she taught at school and everything. So she was really a city girl.
And she was a great dresser, I think, I heard.
Oh my gosh. She was so amazing. I mean, up until, you know, her last day, she was in her Armani pants and like little flats and Chanel. I mean, she just always looked amazing and she never got rid of anything. She always like, you know, was having things mended and fixed and altered. I mean, all of her good pieces stayed with her like forever. It was so neat to see how she took care of everything.
And did you inherit any of it or any of her jewelry?
I did. I wish I had more, but you know, she didn't have a ton. She never had a ton of jewelry. That's what I mean. I guess she had really good things. She had really nice things, but she didn't have a lot of them. So I got a few things. I do have a lot of her like Armani blouses and her pants. And then the one ring that she wore, she lost sadly, but my grandfather had one made for me. So I do think of her, you know, that was really sweet. So she was definitely the biggest style influence for me.
Are you the only granddaughter?
I am, yeah. Which was nice. And I'm the youngest. So she and I, and she lived till she was 94. So I mean, aww. I had her for a really long time. I was so lucky and she knows my son.
Did you always know that you wanted to be an artist?
I always felt like I was. I don't know if I knew from when I was growing up that I could do it as a, you know, job or a career, but I always wanted to make art and give it away, you know, for my babysitters or for my family or anybody that would take it. I have friends that still I haven't seen in, you know, 20 years and they'll send me a picture. Look what I just found. Aww. Like I found this when we were moving and I never got rid of it. And it's like from when I'm 10 or something at camp, you know, it's just so funny because I think everybody else around me knew that I was going to be an artist except for me until, you know, I was in college.
Did you know any artists growing up? Because I think that's one of the things.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I always feel like it's such a strange thing to not know anybody in the field or that does what you want to do and how you come to that point when you don't have any examples.
I had a lot of people around me when I was growing up that were in the art, in that world, because my mom sold art at this contemporary gallery, Macon and Company, for like, I don't know, like 6 years in the 90s. And Doug, who ran the gallery, he was just this eccentric, like fun, like, you know, totally different kind of world from what I was used to, like in Buckhead. And we would go down to Midtown and go to these art openings. I remember seeing a lot of fashion shows in the gallery. And I was always around art collectors and art lovers.
I don't know if you know, I'm also a studio art major with a concentration in painting. And you have your degree is in studio art. Is there a concentration? Is it painting as well?
At College of Charleston, it was just a studio art.
I know in Chapel Hill, you had to do every medium basically. And I don't know that painting was my best medium, but it was the one maybe that was the most challenging for me. Did you connect to other mediums as well? Or was it always just painting?
I feel like I definitely spent the most time later in painting, but I was really into printmaking in college.
I love printmaking.
Yeah. And it was just so, it seemed, you know, harder. It was more effort. You had to have the press. You had to have the, you know, I feel like it was less attainable as far as doing it on my own. So I don't think I stuck with it as much as I probably should have, because I just was overwhelmed with the amount of, you know, things that you need to really, like, you know, do these prints.
Yeah.
So I really loved that part of my studio, like of college. I really got a lot out of that. And my painting professor and my printmaking professor were, you know, they were a couple. So it was cool.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Because I had both of them. I feel like I got lucky having them as like a team, because those were the two mediums that I was most into, but I felt at a certain point I had to choose one or the other, and I chose painting.
I have a piece of yours that it really looks like a print almost, you know, that I had to look at it a couple of times to know whether it was a painting or a print. So I know that you're called, or you're considered an intuitive painter. Can you talk about what that means?
I feel like I start each day a little less constrained by a plan. I would say, like, show up to the studio and really paint from however I feel that day. And if maybe, you know, I want to bring a little piece of Nantucket or wherever I am or wherever I've been or wherever I want to go, you know, maybe that'll come into my conscious and, you know, come out on the painting or the palette as well. But I feel like being the word intuitive just makes the most sense for me, because it's something that is not black or white. I feel like it's a hard thing to teach, you know, somebody. It's a hard thing to sort of write down, because it's really more about the way you feel when you walk in and when you start actually working. It's just something that flows out of you instead of something that you plan to do, which can make things difficult sometimes. But also I feel like when I get to planned out, like I have to do this, this, and this with everything. Of course, I have to do a little bit of that with commission work and stuff, which I enjoy. But if I don't allow myself the freedom to do whatever I feel like doing, I don't feel like I can really make any headway. I just stay safe in one place of like being able to basically close my eyes and do the same thing over and over again. So that's my biggest challenge, is letting those intuitive feelings come in and kind of letting go a little bit of the things that are well practiced and easier to do.
But I think it also seems exhausting.
I know.
to be that empathic, I guess, or that emotional. I mean, it is, right?
Yes, it is. It totally is. And like, you know, a lot of the times I feel like I'm so emotional when I'm in there, I end up absolutely, you know, working on one thing from start to finish, and it just turns out badly, because I'm so like passionate about it that if it doesn't go right, if it doesn't go my way, I'm like, the whole day is kind of gone, like laboring over this, you know, thing. And anyway, and sometimes I feel like if I had a little more methodology, you know, if I had a little bit more of a method to my madness, maybe maybe things would come out, you know, easier, but I don't know how else to do it. You know, I've tried, like you said, like bringing a sketchbook out, like it's not really my practice to do that, because once the idea comes, it's so fleeting, it goes, and it's hard for me to go back to a place that I've like, you know, so it's kind of like, if it comes, then I have to do it right then and there. And otherwise going back to it, I'm already over it. I'm already ready for another idea.
My professor, who is my mentor, who's in his 90s, Marvin Saltzman, who I adore, he's such a tough mentor. People say that this is terrible, you know, get rid of this. But one of the things he made me promise him was that I would never be a weekend painter. He just said, if you're going to do this, this is a full-time job and you have to do this every single day. And during quarantine, I bought myself a birthday gift. I went and bought just a ton of paint and
canvas.
No, it was terrible. I mean, because I worked for maybe 3 days and then I was like, this is not possible unless this is a full-time job. Like this is it's not a hobby.
No, it's not. It's not something you can just kind of pick up and put down. And that's why those days that nothing really happens, maybe you can't show for anything, but something is happening. I mean, you're working, you're putting forth the work, and it sometimes just doesn't show on a canvas, but you have to put in the work to get anywhere with it.
Yeah. I think another thing that we have in common, I think, is that you left college for a minute. Is that right? I did too. where did you go and what did you do?
I left high school too for a little bit. I graduated a year early, went on a Knowles semester.
I did too.
Oh my God.
I did. That's so weird.
That is so weird.
Where did you do your Knowles semester?
Baja Peninsula in Mexico. So And you were, where
Southwest,
were you?
Southwest, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, New Mexico.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, so funny. So,
that was such a life-changing experience.
It really was. I mean, I just want to throw myself out in the wilderness and just see what I got. I'm like, can I do this right now? But I think I could. Honestly, it was incredible. So anyway, I feel like that time away in high school before college was really pivotal.
When I went on my Knowles course, I left straight from my debutante ball.
Yes.
And so I think it was like this thing that it just ripped everything out from under me in the best way and just said like, you don't have to do this. You know, you don't have to be this person.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I felt the same way. And I was with so many different kinds of people from all over and I was sort of blown away. I really was.
After high school, you did a Knowles semester and then what'd you do for the second half of the year?
I went to College of Charleston early. And then in college, I left and always thought, you know, I would be transferring out of College of Charleston. I thought I'd be going to an art school, but, you know, maybe I wasn't ready in the beginning. I was looking up in New York to transfer to Pratt or Parsons or the New York School of Interior Design. I just thought that that's what I needed to do. I don't know why. Well, I do know why. I just kind of felt like I needed to be, like I needed more than a liberal arts for people to take me seriously in the art field. You know, I just thought like going to an art school is what I needed. And then after college, you know, I'd get my MFA and all these things. But
which is so funny looking back on it, isn't it?
I know it is, because it's so really not the case. And it's not what ended up happening. I did move to New York for an internship I got with the PR department at Chanel. So it was so fun, because I was with those like 8 girls. You know, the office was tiny. I was their only full-time intern. At the time, they weren't taking full-time interns. So I was so impressed and amazed with these girls. I just could not believe how much they handled for that huge company being only that tiny little office. I was like blown away.
Well, the other thing that's really bad about working for a French company in New York is that all of your compatriots in Paris have 7 weeks off and you don't.
Gosh, I know. I can't imagine. I mean, I really was like, these girls, I've never seen anybody work as hard. And most all of them are still there.
And what a great example of work ethic for you too.
Yes.
And then you came back to Charleston, and then did you start painting?
Yeah. So I had started doing mostly as much studio art and art history as I could. And then I came back and just stayed with that all the way through. I mean, I never didn't think I was not going to paint or be an art major. You know, it was like, I'm just going to take this opportunity because this is such an incredible opportunity and go up there and see if I love New York enough to like transfer to an art school. And then I decided not to do that. You know, well, I know it was the right decision now looking back.
After graduation, just started painting. Like, how did that actually start as a career?
Yeah, I was working for Kathleen Rivers, who's like a legendary interior designer. She's talk about a stylish woman. I worked for her for a long time during college. And then I also worked for a jewelry designer, Janet Gregg, and the two of them together were awesome. They were incredible. They just said to me, when you graduate, the day you graduate, you're having an art opening and we're going to host it for you. And they did. And that was it.
And did like you sell? Said,
I did. Yeah, it was great. I did. I got my first taste of like getting paid for something. Like, anyway, it was awesome. And throughout college, I would do projects for Kathleen's clients. She was like, oh my gosh, can I come to your studio? And I want to buy this painting for my client, or can you gold leaf these chairs? I was sort of all, you know, I would do anything creative or with my hands for her and her clients. So she, in a way, was grooming me. I think they just believed in me. And my husband's dad is a great mentor for me, and he's an artist and he's in Charleston. Mm-hmm. I leaned on him a lot when I graduated, which was great. And he kind of, you know, pointed me to keep my head down and just work every day. And that was it, you know? So I did. Mm-hmm. And, we just lived on ramen noodles for a few years.
I'm curious, going back to the Kathleen Rivers and the commission work, can you tell me what the process is like and what percentage of your pieces are commission based?
Right now, I would say 50%.
Wow.
Yeah, which is a big chunk. I also would say that the commissions I'm taking on, or the clients that are asking me to do them, are more like, you know, I love your work. I trust you. Here's my space, you know,
yeah.
Kind of you do what you think is right. So, I mean, that's my ideal client, to just right. kind of say like, yeah, like I, or they maybe need to reference like one or two, you know, past pieces or something. And sometimes they don't even do that. It's a fun challenge for me. And basically I'll get to a point where I think it's, you know, 99% finished. I don't send any progress pictures or anything because it can change so much. So I never feel like that's, you know, the right thing to do for me. And then at the end, it's like, okay, maybe I make one little tweak here or there, maybe not. I mean, most of the time's not. And then I sign it and that's it. And so for me, it does sound like a big percentage of my business. Well, 50% might be. I don't know. It hasn't always been like that. I don't know. Maybe it's more like 30, it wavers between like 30% of it and 50%. But, you know, I'm such a yes person. I hate to say no to anybody that wants a piece of art. And, you know, sometimes I really don't have enough inventory, or I have like only massive paintings. And I can understand if if an artist is willing to commission it and you want your own piece. And a lot of people do, they like to feel like something's custom for them.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to try and deliver that. I can separate it from the work I'm trying to do as far as like moving forward, because commission work does sort of set you back in a way. But I'm like able to compartmentalize now, as like, that's just a part of my business. And I do enjoy doing that because I love getting to the end where someone's like, that's great. This is exactly what I wanted. It's fun. The process is fun and I enjoy it.
Well, I think it's interesting just because like when people ask me, why didn't you continue with painting? Why didn't you pursue it? One was because I was not very good, but two was because I found it such an introverted internally facing career that it felt really isolated. And I just think it's interesting also thinking about your, where you are now with social media, but also with the commissions. Your business is very social. I mean, like, you're very, very connected. I don't think it's ever been like that in the art world. I mean, do you?
No, I mean, I definitely don't. And I still feel isolated, even with all that going on. I mean, I do think I get something from the commission process because it's such a lonely profession and I am always by myself, and I don't feel like I can get it done any other way though. So, you know, the social media aspect of it is great. I feel connected and I do feel like there's conversation out there that, you know, I wouldn't have been able to have 10 years ago, obviously, or 5 years ago. That's probably why I enjoy the commission work as much as I do, because I get more interaction with a client versus like, here's everything I have.
Yeah. Tell me what you think.
Yeah, like you can either love it or hate it. But, you know, so that, yeah, that does make the interaction fun. And the gallery openings, you know, and working with the galleries is really fun. And it is social and it connects you. And I make sure I have, you know, a few shows, maybe one or two, you know, at least one solo a year and maybe a fair.
And how has the pandemic affected your job?
It's made me do some things and make some decisions that I think like everybody probably, it was in the back of their head, but now is more on the forefront of like, maybe I should just go ahead and do that. I feel like I've been more adventurous with my ideas and I've been more careful with who I'm working with on things, you know, with that time and with the time away from the studio and with my family, we've figured out some pretty big things. And I think my work will be better for it. So I'm not sure exactly right now how I feel affected. Nobody's canceled a commission or a show or anything, you know, and people are still buying pieces and seem interested. So I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to be thankful every day for that, that I am in control of my business. And, you know, I just, it's life. Yeah. In my life. I mean, it's just kind of like, I feel so fortunate. And then but I hate to see anybody else, you know, not in that position. So it's been like, it's been an interesting couple months.
I think another thing that we share, have in common, is that I suffered from clinical depression in my late teens and 20s, and you were brave enough to talk about 2019 as being a really difficult year for you. Can you talk about that a little bit?
In high school myself, I went through a lot of different medications and, you know, some depression and different doctors and whatever. And in college, I've been off of all that stuff, and I've always felt like I could be in control. Like, I know now that my lifestyle, like, I can control my lifestyle. I can do yoga and I can eat well and I can, you know, do these things. But at the end of the day, you know, fixing yourself is so difficult. And I just ended up having a complete breakdown, I think. And I knew that something was wrong when we came back from a trip with really great friends. It was a perfect vacation. I mean, everything you could have asked for in a vacation. And I just remember getting home and looking at the pictures and thinking, I was not there. Like, I just don't remember being there at all. I don't remember any of these happy moments. I truly didn't feel like I was present. And it was like this out of body experience telling me, this is, you know, you've tried everything. Like, well done. I'm proud of you for trying all these things, but this is not right. Like, you're so, you know, and I've always had a depression where I've like, that's come and gone like this. It was kind of the same kind that I feel so like everything in my life has been, you know, I feel so lucky. I feel great. I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, well, you make me happy and, you know, you're so fun to be around, but I feel like the opposite. Like, I just, you know, that energy is not what I'm feeling ever. So I went and saw a doctor, and he's been in the field forever. took one look at me and he said, oh my gosh, honey, like, you know, you come over here, like, give me a, here's a B12 shot. You know, he was just like, boom, 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 not trying to like overly medicate me, but he was just like, you've experienced, you know, a loss. I had a miscarriage 4 or 5 months earlier. And I, again, like thought at the time, oh, I can get through this. You know, this is great. I have a healthy child. I'm so lucky to have one child. I didn't know how to grieve or if I was supposed to grieve it or if I, you know, if it was just so common that I was just supposed to be like, this is normal. It's fine. You know, I shouldn't be so upset about it, whatever. And I think my body 4 months later with that on top of just everything, you know, just stuff that you can't explain, it just came all crashing down. And he was great. And he put me on 2 different medications that they're not supposed to be forever, but I'm okay if I stay on
them. Well, I also, yeah. And I also think one of the hardest things about depression is, I would think, especially for somebody like you, and has been the case for me, that everybody sort of looks at you and says, you know, what do you have to be unhappy about? Everything's, right. You know, and it just didn't feel like that inside ever. And you couldn't, and you felt even more guilty sharing it.
I don't deserve to say I'm depressed right now. Like, right.
I had these amazing parents. I had nice childhood, but I don't want to get out of bed.
Right. Like, but I can't explain what in the world is going on. And I just,
What was the reaction from social media? Because you shared that.
I was just astounded. I mean, a couple of my friends if I was looking in on their life would say, oh my gosh, that looks incredible. You know, like this guy is so successful. Like he just, I mean, what a Wonder Woman or what a Wonder Man, you know, and a couple of these people came out of the woodwork and just said, you have no idea. Like I just made an appointment to see somebody, you know, or something like that. And I just couldn't believe it really. It made it that much more apparent and worth it to be able to share, and the power of sharing something and how it can help other people. I just kind of felt like people wouldn't want to know that personal side of me because that would ruin what they thought or something,
everything's not perfect.
the art all of a sudden isn't happy anymore.
So. Well, and did it change your work?
I think that... it's hard to say. I don't know if the actual work changed. I think like the process changed a little bit. I definitely wasn't painting as much when I was really like not feeling well at all. I just didn't understand. I just didn't want to work at all. Like you said, I just didn't want to get out of bed for a couple months or 4 months. And
or several years.
Or several years, right. I mean, yes, like for a long time. Yeah, I don't think I saw much change in the actual work. It was just the way I worked. All of a sudden I woke up and I was like, I can do this again or something. You know, I was just awakened.
Isn't it so weird? Because it really is like that. It's like you woke up from a 3 month sleep and you were like, that's so strange.
It's so strange. I don't think I did much of anything. I just was, like I said, going along with stuff, but I was not present at all. And it was so sad to see that in pictures. It was weird that it took pictures to realize it. Yeah.
And you ultimately said that 2019 ended up being the best year of your life. And can you explain why?
In the moment, I think because of none of that stuff had happened, just like I get in an argument with my husband about this all the time because of all the mistakes I made in high school and whatever in college and everything. And he's always like, don't you have, you know, surely you regret that one. And I'm like, I really don't, because truly I don't have those regrets. So with 2019, I a lot of things I felt like didn't go my way necessarily. Like my business was kind of down for the first time I had experienced it. I think going through the miscarriage and then realizing what was beyond that and what like I could do to change my life and to, you know, start doing things differently and socializing differently and putting myself in less anxious moments because I was in control of it, which I thought for a long time I wasn't. Like I had to do these things for work or for social stuff or for my child to, like, you know, have friends and all this stuff. And I did all that stuff. I did everything that you were supposed to do in 2019. And it's still, you know, and still it didn't make me happy. All of a sudden it made me really sad. And then I realized, like, if that hadn't happened, I don't think I would have ever gotten better or as good as I feel now. I think that kind of stuff has to happen in a way.
And don't you think that's a little bit of, like, Noel's life, that, you know, the hardest things make you better?
Yes, because if you don't have those experiences, I mean, you hate to wish them upon anybody, or you hate to have to go through them at the time, but I mean, it shapes you in a way that the good things can't.
Thank you for sharing that, Sally. Are there any things, any practices or things that you've continued to do?
I've totally, you know, fallen in love with yoga, and I've loved the studio in Atlanta. Highland Yoga has been such a source of good energy, great women, I mean, and men. I've met so many really incredible people that it's cool because it stays there. It's like we all have this special spot and we don't have to talk that much, but when you're dedicated to something like that and you're coming in and you all love the instructor and, like, we get so much just, you know, good energy from her and just sweating it out and leaving it all there and, you know, not worrying about what's outside at the moment. It's like when you're doing it together in this community, it feels like I have this whole other community that I could lean on that mm-hmm. I've never felt like I've had.
And probably doesn't even know you're an artist, right?
Like, right. I mean, yeah. Exactly. Like nobody knows my last name. Like I don't know anybody's name. Like you just never know who you're next to, but that's, like, such the appeal too, I think, is everybody can just be, you know, like they can just be in there.
Be.
And everybody, you know, is trying, you know, I feel like my instructor is always like, you know, the real meaning of a yogi to me is showing up somewhere and leaving it just a little bit better. So it's like, you know, anywhere you are, anybody you're talking to, I mean, it's stuck with me. It's like, you want to leave everything just a little bit better before, you know, you were there or something. And anyway, so that practice has been a huge part of my life.
From the sublime to the ridiculous, on every podcast we ask what our guests wore to the prom, and I knew you wore something great. or did you even have a prom because you were on Knowles?
No, I did. I missed my senior prom, but I did go to the prom years before that. So I was... Oh my gosh, what did I wear? I wore a light pink laundry by
Shelley Siegel.
Yes. What year was that? I guess I was a junior, but it was so simple. It was the prettiest silhouette. It was like a ballerina pink, and it was this kind of silk, not taffeta, but it was a really pretty silk, and it had a high, like, waistline, and it just kind of, you know, A-lined out, you know, to my mid-calf. And it was so simple and so pretty. And I remember being very validated with my choice because a girl that I grew up, I guess it was my mom's goddaughter, she ended up borrowing it for her engagement party.
And oh, like, my gosh.
I know. I was like, I have made a good decision.
And had you bought it at Neiman Marcus with your grandmother?
Yes.
Oh, that is the best.
Yes, she.
That's always, the best.
Yes. She always took me to get my special, you know, occasion dresses and everything. And yes.
I love that.
I know. It was great.
Well, that's a great way to end the podcast. Thank you, Sally, so, so much.
Oh, thank you. This was so fun. I love getting to talk about all this stuff. It's so fun to have so many things in common, too. My goodness.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's great. It's so fun.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. What We Wore is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.